This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. Before the Beatles came to America, they were making a name for themselves playing small clubs in Germany. In 1960, the Beatles went to Hamburg as a five-member band. This included Pete Best, the drummer who preceded Ringo Starr, and Stu Sutcliffe, the bass player who quit the band in 1961, the year before he died of a brain hemorrhage. Terry spoke with Best last summer. Here's the Beatles from a German nightclub performance in 1961, with Pete Best on drums and John Lennon singing lead.
Now, you were with the Beatles on their first German tour in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
What was that tour like?
It was a challenge. You've got to remember, we were, 17, 18-year-olds. We were supposed to be going out to Hamburg for a month, and we ended up being over there nearly close to 4 months. And, of course, when we went out there, we had no idea that we were going to be playing in Hamburg, which was the St. Pauli area of Hamburg, which was the red light entertainment district of the world at that time. We knew that Hamburg and Liverpool were ports, but there was nothing as erotic as this particular area. The clubs were great. I mean, it was wonderful from that point of view. It was an exciting place. The daunting thing was that when we actually got there, we were told that we would have to go to play 6-7 hours a night, 6-7 nights a week. And that was where the challenge came in. But we quickly mastered ourselves to it. It was an exciting time. You know, there was lots of wine, there was lots of women. Hard work. We played hard on stage, and we played hard off stage as well.
Do you remember your first meeting with Brian Epstein?
Yes, we do, actually. It was, I suppose you could turn around and say, very informal. We were unaware of the fact that Brian had come down to watch us at the Cavern. But he'd watched us, he'd made a few inquiries, he realised, you know, who the Beatles were, and things must have been going through his mind. So word was passed to us after we'd played a dinnertime session, which meant that we were playing for the public between 12 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, for the office workers and kids off school. And the message was passed to us, and very informally, basically, turned around and said, I would like to see you in my office round about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, which fitted in with our timing perfectly. So we had a couple of pints in the grapes, and then off we trundled to meet Brian Epstein. And there he was in his formal attire of, you know, pinstripe suit, white shirt, polished shoes, you know, very clinical and clerical, but looking, you know, $1 million. And that was when he basically talked the deal around a little bit and said, it's a no strings a deal attached. I've always wanted to manage a rock band. You know, I might be able to help you, but, you know, the bottom line is there's no strings attached. If it doesn't work out, then you go your way and I'll go my way. And they gave us a bit of time to think it over. And we did, and we went back and I talked it over with my parents, and we talked it over amongst ourselves. And I suppose you could turn around and say that, you know, the overall opinion was that, yes, he should be manager. And that's how Brian became our manager.
Well, you did a couple of auditions with Brian Epstein in the hopes of getting a recording contract. The first was for Decca Records, and that was mm-hmm. in early January of 1962. Why don't we hear one of the originals? This is called Like Dreamers Do, and Paul McCartney sings lead on this. It's really interesting to hear him sing, because aside from a couple of places, it sounds like a pretty different style than the one he became known for. What do you think?
Well, I mean, Paul had a hell of a range, and he could deliver most songs. And, it, you know, I suppose with it being an original number, he wanted it to be delivered the way he felt it should be. And it is different, but it's very contagious, you know, the way he delivers it. It's a semi, I suppose you could turn around and say semi-rock ballad, if there is such a thing. But it's a good song, and it was very catchy, and it caught on with the audiences all over the world.
Okay, well, let's hear Like Dreamers Do, recorded in 1962, featuring the Beatles with my guest, Pete Best, on drums.
I saw a girl in my dreams, and so it seems that I will love her. You are that girl in my dreams, and so it seems that I will love you. And I waiting for your kiss, waiting for the bliss, like dreamers do. And
shortly thereafter, you did another audition for EMI Records.
Yeah.
And on this, you recorded four tracks, Besame Mucho, P.S. I Love You, Ask Me Why, and Love Me Do. I guess it's probably, what, the first time you recorded Love Me Do?
It was, actually, yes. We'd played it many, many times. We improvised it in Germany, and that was when we first heard that we got the recording contract, and Brian Epstein... I'm talking now about April 62 when we opened the Star Club. It was very much a case of Brian telegraphed us and turned around and said, congratulations, you got the recording contract, start rehearsing your own material. And that was when we tried that out on the German audiences. We tried different formats. We tried a guitar lick in there, as opposed to the world-famous harmonica, which, you know, the world knows today. We weren't happy with that. The arrangement, we changed that around a little bit. Then we introduced the harmonica into it because we wanted to make it a little bit more haunting. And there was a change of beat in there because what was happening in those days, change of drum pattern in a number was very commercial. You didn't hear it too many times. So consequently, here on my particular version, which was the one that we played to the audiences in Germany and Liverpool prior to the recording, has a change of beat in it, and it was, you know, they liked that change of beat, and we thought that it worked well.
On this audition version of Love Me Do, it's slower than the version that was actually released, and the harmonies are a little off. It's not very polished sounding.
Well, it wasn't. You've got to remember that wasn't a finished. You know, it wasn't
exactly
meant to be finished.
Yeah.
It was supposed to, you know, go. We were supposed to go back. It was just to give George Martin an idea of the type of material that we could write. The whole essence of it, that we were supposed to go back and put the finishing touches to it. So what, you know, the people hear, it's a slower version. It's a little bit more country orientated. If you listen to the harmonica, it's a little bit more haunting. And I think there's a little bit of sorrow in it because we were reflecting the fact that Stu, you know, had died a couple of days beforehand. We were still under that particular, you know, tragedy. That was still hanging over us. And I think it was reflected in the music as well.
Okay, here's the Beatles, recorded in 1962, with my guest Pete Best on drums. What was it like for you to watch the Beatles become the most famous band in the world? And you had been with them and weren't any longer.
Interesting, if I could put it that way, and mystifying as well. I suppose the heartache came when the first record, Love Me Do, went into the charts. The mercurial rise and the, you know, watching them become the, you know, the biggest phenomenon in the music industry was something which I don't think anyone expected. So that was like total fantasy. But the heartache for me was initially, you know, with Love Me Do, because that was the belief that we had in the band that we could break through into the English charts. And lo and behold, with their first record, you know, the first release on a major English label, you know, that was the success we'd believed in. So the rest of it, you know, was a little bit pipe dream.
Pete Best, speaking to Terry Gross in September 2003.